Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Happy Monday to all of you. I hope you had a wonderful weekend, a wonderful Easter weekend for those of you who celebrate. Coming up today, we're going to talk a lot about guns. You may have heard that the Washington State Senate did pass a ban on so-called assault weapons, which essentially means that it clears the way to sign it into law. We'll talk about the process moving forward from there. We'll hear from a local gun shop owner about what it means for their business. And I'm also going to talk about what really has been the stunning moral hypocrisy of Democrats on issues related to violence perpetrated with a firearm. You'll find out that when it comes to the gun control issue, it is not my passion issue. Guns are not my passion issue. The Constitution is my passion issue. And safety is my passion issue. And so I think when it comes to Democrats talking out of both sides of their mouth on these issues, that's really what I want to focus on. Today, also coming up later, the Seattle Times had this awesome article looking back at Governor Jay Inslee making all these promises in 2018 about how we were going to fix our state's mental health system by 2023. And now, of course, it's 2023 and the mental health system is still in absolute shambles and the mental health crisis is an absolute emergency on our streets. So we're going to dive into that. Later on, Riley Gaines, who's a collegiate swimmer in the NCAA, gave this speech at San Francisco State University, and she was, no surprise, mobbed after the fact. She was talking about how she doesn't agree with biological males competing against people like her. And we're going to talk about, again, going back to this central theme of hypocrisy, how that type of political violence from trans activists goes really ignored and is completely forgiven by the media and a lot of politicians. So we'll dive into that. Nicole, hello. How are you?
Hi, Brandy.
How was your Easter weekend?
It was great. Yeah. Had a big family dinner yesterday. And yeah, I had a great weekend.
An Easter egg hunt?
Yes, the kids did one. I kind of hung out to the side. I missed the hiding of the eggs. Usually I'm there for that, but I was a little slow moving on Sunday morning.
Oh, that's okay. I like when people do simultaneously an adult Easter egg hunt, where it's like, you know, you put something adult in there, like maybe some little bottles of booze, or I like chocolate.
You know, we're almost there. A lot of the kids are grown up now. We only have a few little ones still hanging out. So yeah, we might get there. That's a good idea for next year.
It's still fun to hunt for eggs. I would do that if somebody wanted to. You know, I was half hoping Mike would get me an Easter egg basket. Yeah. Although, you know, I probably shouldn't be eating chocolate right now, but could have put some celery sticks or something lame in there.
That's cute.
It's the thought that counts. Thanks, Mike. Real nice guy.
Did you get him one?
No. Anyway, welcome to those of you who are on the live stream on Patreon, Locals, our awesome subscribers on Facebook and YouTube. Please feel free to leave your comments. As always, we will read your comments and thoughts and disagreements, especially at the end of the show today. But we're going to start, of course, with this so-called assault weapon ban. And I'm just going to call it what they call it. I know people take issue with the phrase assault weapons. How about I just say weapons of war, a ban on weapons of war? And we'll really dive headfirst into using their lexicon on this issue. This is no surprise. I think that we kind of knew at the beginning of the session that Democrats had enough support to pass an assault weapons ban after years of trying to do so. You know, I had kind of laughed in previous years because Democrats have had a trifecta in Washington state for, I believe, the last seven legislative sessions, which means that if they had their entire party on board with it, it would have passed a long time ago. But there were detractors and defectors, and they couldn't afford to really lose anyone. And so Democrats would blame Republicans every year for their assault weapon ban failing. But it's like, well, you guys have the majority. You could pass it. So to blame Republicans is a little bit ridiculous. It's really you not getting your house in order. But this year, it became pretty clear that they would have the votes. We know it passed in the House, and then it just passed in the Washington State Senate. So what will happen now is it'll go back to the House for a vote of concurrence on any changes that it went through in the Senate, and then it'll go to the desk of Washington Governor Jay Inslee. And of note, and this is very important for those of you who are gun enthusiasts who might be thinking about trying to buy one of these weapons of war before they're banned in Washington state, it does have an emergency clause attached. So that means the second that Governor Jay Inslee signs it, it becomes law. And so it's this kind of weird gray area we're in right now where, and we'll talk about it more in a moment, where if you're thinking about going to buy one and you have to go through the background check process and that takes time, can you actually get it in your hands before they're illegal in Washington state? So that's a question. Washington will become one of just a few states in the country that has an outright ban on these sorts of guns. And not only that, on the parts associated with building one of these sorts of guns. Governor Jay Inslee took to Twitter, as he often does, to celebrate this decision, not only on this, but other gun control-related pieces of legislation passed by Democrats in Olympia. He said, "We refuse to accept gun violence as normal. Gun violence in all its forms can be prevented." Thank you, Washington Senate Democrats and House Democrats. We'll talk more about gun violence prevention coming up in a moment. Attorney General Bob Ferguson, this has been his baby. This has been his passion project to try to get this ban across the line. And for him, politically speaking, it comes at a good time because he is about to announce his, I'm assuming, he's about to announce his 2024 campaign for governor. And this is going to be a big point that he campaigns on, is getting this assault weapon ban across the finish line. So this is all leading up to what we know is going to happen. And, you know, he'll probably win, but maybe a little too early to say that, but he put out a tweet saying, "Breaking, the Washington State Senate just passed a ban on the sale and distribution of military-style assault weapons. The Senate put the safety of our schools and public spaces above the gun lobby. This is the culmination of a lot of hard work and perseverance." So now we know the two things that Bob Ferguson is going to campaign on. Nicole, you want to guess what they are? What are the two things that Bob Ferguson is going to build his gubernatorial campaign around?
Hard work and perseverance.
Good answer, but no. Any idea? Guns.
Guns.
Gun. Yeah. What's the other one? Oh, my God. Nicole, you're fired. Daryl, can you sit in for Nicole? His hatred of Donald Trump.
Oh, of course. Are we still? We're still going to be going after that?
Oh, you never let that go. He's never going to let that go. Ugh. So now we know the two things that Bob Ferguson is going to build his gubernatorial campaign around. And I've got an interview here in a moment. Before I get to that, just sort of my opinion on this. I am not a gun enthusiast. I don't own a gun. And I mean, although I just recently got a CPL and I plan to own a gun very soon because I was victimized walking my dogs and I simply refuse to be a victim any longer. So that's a whole separate conversation. But I approach this from a constitutional perspective. I'm a big fan of our Constitution, as you know, and I don't think the way this law is structured that it can survive constitutional muster. And so I think the question is more so, how long will this be in effect? And what are the implications between when the governor signs it to when a court ultimately rules on it? I mean, just on the reading of the bill, I just don't think it survives a constitutional challenge. And so that's where I'm sort of at here. And Republicans had tried to attach an amendment to it that would have said, okay, we're not going to fight against this assault weapon ban because we know it's going to pass, but we want to wait to put it into effect until the legal aspect of this is sorted out. So they basically said, let's make sure the thing is constitutional before we actually put it into effect. And Democrats said no. They wouldn't agree to that amendment, which is sort of funny, with Democrats saying, we know that there's a possibility that this isn't even legal, that it's not constitutional, but we want it to go into effect on an emergency basis anyway. So that's interesting. But there's also a question about what this means for businesses that sell firearms, because we know that these type of weapons can account for a large percentage of what they sell and of their revenue coming in. And so we wanted Wade from Wade's Eastside Guns to come in and talk to us a little bit about the business aspect of this. Wade, welcome to Undivided. Thanks for being here.
You're back. Good morning.
So this was, I mean, they have been trying for some time to pass this type of ban. They haven't been able to. Did you have the sense that this year was the year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We knew it was going to go in. The, you know, the Democrat Party on these kind of issues is 100% in lockstep. There's no dissent at all. And, you know, in the past, it's what saved us was the rural Democrats. But they're essentially getting bullied into going along with legislation that they don't agree with right now. And we don't have a majority. So we're just dead on any issue they really want to pass.
So I really want to talk about this from a business perspective, because I've heard it said that there's this school of thought out there that what they're really trying to do is make it really hard or unprofitable for businesses like yours to operate. And so that's a way to get more guns, you know, to stop guns from being purchased. Do you get that sense at all?
You know, I don't. The sense I get is that you know, Ferguson and Inslee and the rest of the hardcore lefty Democrats that basically run this state. And I personally think Bob Ferguson is the most powerful man in Washington right now and is writing and driving these laws through. I think they just hate the personal ownership of guns, of any guns, and they're just picking them off, you know. For decades, you couldn't get a law passed, an anti-gun law passed in Washington, because both the left and right enjoyed firearms and wanted to have firearms around. And but now, and you know, they did the two that they did pass were initiatives, right? 594 and 1639. You know, they just overfunded an initiative and got those to fly. But now it looks like they can have whatever they want.
So from a business perspective, what does this ban do to your bottom dollar?
Well, you know, we're known for everything that is covered in this ban. And it's a big part of our business. I would suspect it's going to take 30% off our sales, probably a little bit more off of our profits. You know, we have a shooting range and we're going to offer everything else that's not banned yet. And so, you know, we'll do okay, but it's definitely going to give us a haircut.
You mentioned there, and I've seen some disparate information about this online. So your reading of the bill, what is banned?
Oh man. You know, I am not detail guy, but it's anything that the layman would consider an assault weapon, right? So AR-15s of any derivative, any kind of semi-automatic rifle that takes a magazine. The big one, which is really interesting, is they banned parts, right? Because an AR-15, you can build from a receiver. That's the part that has the serial number on it. That's actually, you do the background check. But they've banned parts now. So there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of the receivers floating around. And if people didn't have parts to build those out into guns, now it would be illegal for them to acquire those parts. And then it goes out in the weeds on some other semi-automatic versions of ARs as pistols and that. And it's hard to read. I mean, the law is not well written. We can't get any guidance. You know, we can ask Ferguson's office for clarification, and they won't give us anything. Literally won't give us anything on any gun law. They're just basically figure it out for yourselves. And hopefully we figure it out correctly and don't get prosecuted for unintended violation.
Yeah. So this has an emergency clause attached. So as soon as pen hits paper from the governor, it is law. So have you already stopped selling these guns then?
Oh, no. We're going to go right to the deadline. And there's also some, it's hard to determine what we can deliver and not deliver. Cause you know, we do the paperwork. We actually, you know, make a sale, so to speak. Do the paperwork and background, and then there's a 10 or a 15 day waiting period now, depending on if it's considered an assault weapon. I hate using the language of the enemy, but just to be concise, you know, I'll go there. So it's assault weapon or a pistol, right? Pistol's got a 10 day wait. And we've been talking to Republicans in Congress and the Senate, and some will tell us that we can deliver and some will tell us that we can't. So we're not sure what we're going to do just yet.
Yeah, and that's why I asked, because if you've got someone who comes in, they buy it, you know, you're sending through the paperwork, and then in a few days, the governor signs the ban, and then you have, I mean, you're going to have to refund that person their money, I assume, and then you're just, what, stuck with a paperweight?
Well, so here's how, you know, where we look at it is, if the background check is passed and we've been paid, those are guns that we think we can deliver.
Okay.
If the background check has been instigated but has not cleared, those are ones that we won't deliver. And yes, we're going to definitely have to refund a bunch of money. But again, you know, I love my customers and we have the best customers in the world, and we're just going to do the best we can for them as long as we can, and then figure out what's next.
Have you seen a pretty sizable increase in those purchases leading up to the end, like in anticipation of this passing?
Oh yeah. This is, whenever they try to ban something, it's the best driver of sales that we ever get. You know, I started selling guns in 1988. It was rare that somebody owned an AR-15. I mean, really rare. They were rare and they were very inexpensive and not easy to sell. And then the first ban kicked in 1989, and it just drove our industry for the last, 30 years. And the AR-15 has become the most popular firearm by far. Like, second place is over the horizon. It's so far behind it. And we're up a solid 300% in like the last 5 or 6 weeks. And we were up before that too, but we've been going, and we even have been open on Sundays to catch some more business and people that can't get in during the week. So we've been working hard at this. My guys are, they're tired. I mean, they've been working their butts off.
Yeah. Wade, I know you're on a tight schedule today. I'm just curious, you mentioned Bob Ferguson, who you said you think is the most powerful person in the state right now. In my eyes, he's the front runner to be governor. I just don't see anybody who's come up who could beat him at this juncture. So for you, as someone who makes their livelihood off of firearms, how do you feel about the prospect of a Governor Bob Ferguson for 4 years or 8 years or 12 years?
Oh, man. But you're just going to ruin my day thinking about it. I'm a gun shop, and I have to follow every rule, every law, whether I consider it constitutional or unconstitutional. I mean, if we try to protest this by selling things that are banned in this, I'm going to get fined. I don't know if they'd throw me in jail, but I'm going to get beat up pretty bad by the government. But we expect some level of fair play in this. And this law is obviously unconstitutional. I mean, there's no way that this is going to stand up long term. And I just expect the same level of lawful behavior from the opponents, who are, Democrats, right? And they're in power now. And they're ignoring their sworn duty to uphold the Constitution. And it really, we don't have a fair playing field. We don't have a level playing field now. So it's tough. I'm dug in. I'm going to sell guns probably until they put me in the ground. So, I'm going to keep slugging away as long as I can. But definitely it's not a level playing field for us.
All right. And you hit it there. Is this going to last, and is this going to be upheld? And that's the real question. And I know Republicans had tried to add an amendment saying, hey, we won't oppose this, but we want to say that it doesn't go into effect until its constitutionality is upheld. And Democrats said no. So, Wade, I have a feeling it's not the last time we're going to be talking to you. Wade of Wade's East Side Guns. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate Wade from Wade's East Side Guns talking about this from a business perspective and what it means for him and for his business. 300% increase. 300% increase in the sale of these types of guns in anticipation of this ban. And I think that is the real reason why there's an emergency clause on it. I don't think it's because they really believe that they need to put it into effect right away to save lives. I think it's because they know that if they wait until the usual day that new laws take effect, which is usually July 1st, the year they're passed, that they'll have a ton of these guns sold between the time it's signed and July 1st. They're saying, we don't want to give you the opportunity. And even right now, as you heard from Wade, it's sort of this weird gray area where it's like, okay, if somebody comes in today to buy an AR-15 and they're going through the background check and that's not done, and then the governor signs it, then he doesn't think they can hand that gun over to that person, even if they've paid for it, unless that background check process has been completed. So it's already a weird gray area, but 300% increase. I think that's very, very interesting. Also worth noting, in case it isn't clear and I haven't mentioned it yet, this doesn't mean that you can't keep the assault weapons that you already have. It's not something, you're kind of grandfathered in, but you can't purchase any new ones. You can't even buy the parts to be able to put one together if you want. Now, really quickly, I'm going to, in our segment Unbelievable, continue on this narrative in a moment. But what I'll say is you'll never hear me on the show act like a firearms expert. I'm just not. And when I don't know something about guns, I try to ask someone like Wade's over at Wade's Eastside Guns to try to explain it to me, you know, the intricacies. And I think that's one of the real problems with these bills, and you heard him articulate it, is they're clearly written by people who don't understand firearms. And so they're written in a way that it's confusing to even gun shops. Like, can I sell this and that or what? And so you can kind of see how this whole thing gets a little murky and gets a little confusing. And then you've got gun shop owners who are scared that they're going to run afoul of the law, not intentionally, but unintentionally, because the way the law is written is so hopelessly vague. And again, it goes back to that issue of, is it even constitutional? And do Democrats care if it's constitutional? Because that's what it matters to me at the end of the day, is it constitutional? I mean, they passed the tax on capital gains knowing that it wasn't constitutional, but hoping, and obviously rightfully so, that the state's high court would make a political decision to justify it. And that's probably what they're hoping right now, is they're going to get some judges that are on their side on this issue, and it's going to be able to withstand constitutional scrutiny. So we'll have more on this story in just a minute, because I want to talk about, while I'm not a gun expert, something I feel like I am an expert in by now is hypocrisy. And I want to talk about the true moral hypocrisy of Democrats on the issue of violence and violence perpetrated with a firearm. But first, you may have noticed we've been adding some new sponsors to the show, which is great. I love having businesses that believe in what we're doing. And I feel like the sponsors we've added, that's kind of what it's about for them. You know, yes, they want advertising for their business, but they also believe in the mission of the show. And we can't operate without them. I couldn't have Nicole here. We can't do the show the way we're doing it without advertising revenue and without sponsors who believe in the mission. And I'm really excited about a sponsor that we're adding today. And I want to bring Nicole in for this, because this was one of Dory's longtime dedicated sponsors. And it's Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com, a real estate agent. And what, you know, sometimes when somebody reaches out and they say, hey, we want to do a sponsor on the podcast, I have to do a lot of digging into that person and that company to make sure that they're going to treat you well, that they're in line with our mission. And I didn't have to do any of that with Wes because of Dory. Like, if Dory endorsed him, I'm like, oh, well, that's a no-brainer. That just sort of carries over. And I'm like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
He definitely did the work on his sponsors. And he maintained such great relationships with them.
Yeah.
I mean, he cared a lot about how the listeners were experiencing the businesses that he was endorsing and how they were feeling treated by him and getting what they needed out of being a sponsor of the show.
Yeah. And if there were a business that weren't treating his listeners well, Dory would have dropped him in a second. He never would have read those ads. And the other thing about Wes, and I'm actually going to post a video to social media, I had Wes Jones in to tape a conversation about the state of the real estate market and all of that. But the other thing that really just does it for me with Wes Jones is when Dory went through his whole cancel culture thing, Wes dropped his ads. He pulled his ads off Cairo Radio until Dory came back. And so that to me is like the ultimate test of loyalty. Absolutely. Of a business, where he's like, no, I'm not giving in to stupid cancel culture, even if I'm not getting this advertising. Like, he pulled it. And I'm going to post a video where Wes and I are discussing that. So welcome Wes Jones and Associates, to the Undivided Podcast. We're so glad to have you. I'm so grateful for your loyalty to our friend Dory, and also really excited to be working with you on the show. So again, look out for that social media video where Wes Jones Johns and I are going to talk about this new sponsorship, but also, you know, what went down with Dory Monson. But if you are interested in selling your home right now or finding out, is this the right time to sell my home? Because I will say, and we know it, the market's been a little crazy lately. And I can understand that if you're like, gosh, I need to sell my home, but is this the best time to do it? Am I going to get what I need to get for it? Go to sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com. And just reach out to Wes and ask him those questions. And if it's just not the right time, if he thinks you ought to wait a little bit longer, or if he thinks this is as good as it's going to get right now, he'll let you know. So sellwithwes.com. Welcome to the Undivided Podcast. Wes Jones, really, really excited to have you here. All right, we're going to continue on with this topic around the ban of so-called assault weapons in our segment, Unbelievable. So, as I said, I'm not a firearms expert, but I talk a lot about hypocrisy. And to me, that's one of the most stunning parts of this ban on assault weapons that Democrats have pushed through in Washington state. And I want to have this conversation under the assumption that banning assault weapons will stop shootings. Okay, let's just, I know some of you don't agree with that, but let's just have this entire conversation on that premise. On the premise that Democrats are truly doing this, not out of some deep-seated hatred for guns, but because they want to save lives. They're doing it for a just reason, okay? So we're gonna operate on that premise, on believing what they say about their intentions here. Here's what bothers me. At the same time that Democrats are pushing through these restrictions on law-abiding gun owners, they are simultaneously trying to ease punishments, make life easier for criminals who actually use guns to commit violent crimes. And to me, those two things are absolutely running afoul of one another. And it tells on Democrats and what their true intentions are with all of this. And actually, at the beginning of this legislative session, back in December, I posted a long video about my frustration with this. And I cited specific examples. So again, I want you to keep in mind what Democrats say their motivation is for banning assault weapons. They say their motivation is to save lives, to save innocent lives. But my issue with that is this is the same party that for the past several years has been proposing bills that the only intention of these bills is to make life easier for criminals who use guns to hurt people. You might recall in the 2022 legislative session, Democrats introduced a bill that would have lowered the punishment for someone who murders another human in a drive-by shooting. That was the only intention of the bill, was to say that if you commit a drive-by shooting and you kill someone with a gun, we want to make sure that you don't automatically have to serve life in prison without the possibility of parole. That is an actual bill they introduced. So now square that with what they're saying right now about the ban on assault weapons. Can you make those two things make sense? You can't, if we are to believe their stated mission of the assault weapons ban. And there are countless other examples. Democrats have floated bills this legislative session that would reduce mandatory sentences for violent criminals, including criminals who use guns to hurt people. They floated a bill that would have reduced mandatory sentences for someone who uses a gun in the commission of a crime in a school zone. So if we're to believe, again, that they're banning these so-called assault weapons to prevent things like school shootings, and they want to protect our kids in school, why would they simultaneously introduce bills that would take it easy, that would ease punishments for actual criminals who commit a crime with a gun in a school zone? And we can go back even further than that, to the summer of love, the summer of 2020, to the Chaz Chop debacle. Do you remember when the self-proclaimed warlord of Chop, a man named Raz Simone, was handing out these weapons of war out of the trunk of his car to anyone standing nearby so that they had an AR-15 or an AK-47 to be able to patrol this newly autonomous zone? Let me ask you, did Bob Ferguson have anything to say about Raz Simone? Did Jay Inslee have anything to say about Raz Simone? Did the Seattle City Council have anything to say about Raz Simone? No. In fact, behind the scenes, they worked with Raz Simone to try to bribe him, literally bribe him with taxpayer funds to get CHOP to end. The only person I heard say anything about Raz Simone handing out weapons of war out of the trunk of his car to people on the streets of Seattle was then Seattle City Council President Lorena Gonzalez, who blamed the whole ordeal on unscrupulous gun dealers, not on Raz Simone, who was handing them out of the trunk of his car. So they have an issue with weapons of war in the hands of law-abiding gun owners, but they don't have an issue with weapons of war in the hands of someone like Raz Simone and his group that took over six square blocks of the city? Why don't they have an issue with that? Well, it all boils down to ideology. It simply didn't fit their political narrative. It wasn't politically palatable for them to speak out about it at the time. So again, if I'm to operate on the assumption that Democrats are being genuine about why they want to ban these sorts of weapons, are doing it truly to save lives, the only possible way that I could believe that is if they weren't introducing other bills that will serve to do the exact opposite. Is if they were speaking out about these kinds of weapons at every juncture, including when they're used by activists pushing narratives that they agree with. And so in that sense, it is truly unbelievable to me that Democrats continue to stand behind this narrative that they care about public safety, that they want to protect people from being victimized by someone with a gun, because their words and their actions simply do not line up. And I would challenge any Democrat, I would challenge any Democrat who supports the assault weapon ban to tell me why I'm wrong. In fact, Nicole, let's invite Bob Ferguson on. We'll invite the governor on. We'll invite leaders, Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate on to explain that discrepancy to us.
On it.
On it, because it truly does not make any sense. I want to believe that you're doing things with the best of intentions. That's what this show is about. But I can no longer give you the benefit of the doubt on this issue, because the way that you're acting, the things you're proposing, are truly unbelievable. All right. We announced last week our newest sponsor on the show, MethodWorks Consulting. And I've had a couple of you send me emails about MethodWorks, and I don't know if you've reached out to them finally, but MethodWorks does all things tech for your business, whether you've got 5 employees or 50 employees. Maybe you're like, it's time to get my stuff on the cloud. And you're like, what is the cloud? Which I'm saying that because I am so tech ignorant that when I started my podcast, I was like, oh my God, I'm completely out of my depth. Like, I need to bring in people to help me with this stuff. Because as a small business owner, you just want to focus on running your business, on growing your business, and not all the other crap that comes along with it. And so MethodWorks and Mark Harmsworth, who's the owner of MethodWorks, who's one of us sane people. So that's good. He used to be in the Washington State House of Representatives, super pro-business Republican. He is offering only for Undivided viewers and listeners, 1 month of free security monitoring and a free security review at the front end. So if that's something you feel like you need for your business, you want to protect your data, your customers' data, you need help maybe with computers and other technology for your employees, check them out, methodworks.com. That's methodworks.com. And make sure to tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast so you can get that free security review and 1 month of free security monitoring. All right. I want to talk about the failed state of our mental health system. This segment is brought to you by our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter so you can be alerted to opportunities to make a difference, to reach out to lawmakers on bills that just simply cannot stand. So future42.org. Our mental health system is in shambles. I don't think anyone would disagree with that, even Democrats. I don't know how you can look at what's playing out on our streets. The homeless crisis is a drug crisis and a mental health crisis. You have a lot of people dealing with both, a severe mental health issue and addicted to substances at the same time. A lot of what we call repeat offenders are dealing with a mental health crisis, people who are victimizing oftentimes innocent folks out on the street and who end up cycling in and out of our criminal justice system. And you might be asking yourself, well, when is it going to get better? because we've heard promises for a long time in our state that there was going to be a prioritization of fixing our mental health system, that we were going to spend money on the issue and it was going to get better. But the Seattle Times had a really interesting article looking back at 2018. And I'm going to play this clip for you. This is Governor Jay Inslee in 2018, standing outside Western State Hospital, the state's largest psychiatric facility, which is absolutely in shambles and crumbling, and promising that they were going to make things better by 2023. Watch.
By 2023, we intend to have about a dozen 16-bed state-run facilities located throughout the state of Washington. And in cooperation with our community partners, we will have built a network of private hospital beds and supportive housing units and other community-based settings for patients who don't necessarily need to be in hospitals, but still need some level of care. Now, this is a heavy lift. It is an ambitious schedule, and it means we will need to fund upfront costs and make some difficult budget decisions. But 2023 is a doable deadline, and it is necessary. And I want to make this point. Because this will require some difficult decisions, we do need a deadline.
That's interesting. Gosh, I'm racking my brain to think of what year it is. Oh, that's right. It's 2023. And it is quite clear that those commitments and the promises that Governor Jay Inslee was making while standing in front of Western State Hospital in 2018 have not come to fruition. And the Seattle Times had an excellent article diving into all of this and stating the obvious, which is that those plans and those promises have simply not been fulfilled. And big credit to the Seattle Times for doing this really deep dive into the beds that are available or not available, promised beds that haven't come to fruition. In the article, the Times writes that as of right now, there are no walk-in crisis centers in King County. And by and large, hospital emergency rooms and jails take the responsibility for caring for people despite the high cost and being ill-equipped to treat people in psychiatric emergencies. And I'm sure you've heard of the stories by now. We have people who have committed violent crimes, including a guy who stabbed a woman at a bus stop, threw an elderly nurse down the stairs, and then killed a homeless man with a piece of rebar, who the state is actually paying. The state has actually had to pay money ordered by a judge because they haven't got him the psychiatric care that he is supposed to get. And so now our mental health system is in such a state of disrepair, 5 years after the governor promised what he promised in that clip. It's so bad that we're actually paying violent criminals because we're not able to get them the care that they need. And so this all brings me back to what the governor is trying to do in his final year in office. And that is he's trying to get billions of dollars in money committed to primarily housing. But he also says to help with substance abuse and mental health issues. And need I remind you of what he said in that clip in 2018? Basically, you know, this is going to be hard. We want to do this by 2023, but we're going to have to get some more money. We're going to have to make some tough budget decisions. And I can't help but see a lot of parity to what the governor is saying right now about fixing the homelessness issue, substance abuse, mental health. Oh, this is going to be hard. This isn't easy. In the next 6 years, we want to build such and such numbers of affordable housing units, but we need more money. This is a pattern. This is a pattern of failure. This is a pattern of telling you that he's going to get something done if only he can get a little more money, in this case, a lot of more money, billions of dollars. We have to ask ourselves, at what point do you stop believing him? At what point do you look at someone who's been the governor for 11 years and say, this has gotten worse under your leadership? The state's largest psychiatric hospital lost its federal certification under your leadership. You promised us results in 2018 by 2023. Those results have not manifested. And we're not going to give you another dime until you can prove that you have a solution that will work, and then we'll dump money into it. The governor has not proven that. And in fact, the best thing that can happen is that we don't give this governor any more money for any of these projects, and then we wait and see what the next governor has in store, what the next governor's plans are for dealing with this. Because I'm sorry, but in his final year in office, his final full year, we've got a year and a half left, last year and a half in office, I don't think that Governor Jay Inslee and whatever solutions he might float are worth dumping another diamond to. And his own words in 2018 prove that. All right, this segment has been brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42, a great common sense group that just wants to bring balance back to the state. Sign up for their newsletter, future42.org, because they send out great opportunities. For instance, when we had a public safety rally on the steps of the Capitol, they'll send out an email, try to get you on board to come down. So it really does give you opportunities to turn your frustration into action. I love being an ambassador for Future 42 and everything they're trying to accomplish in the state of Washington. Okay, let's move outside of Washington State for a moment. There is a story. I watched this video and immediately I felt like an anxiety attack coming up because it reminds me so much of what I went through during Chaz Chop. And I'm going to talk about that a little in a little bit. But by now you're probably familiar with a young woman named Riley Gaines, an NCAA athlete who's been speaking out about biological men competing against women. And saying what is a really reasonable thing, which is that's not fair. That's not fair. I failed to find that controversial. And to the best of my knowledge, Riley Gaines hasn't been nasty towards transgender people. She hasn't been personally attacking people. She's just trying to stand up for her right to be able to compete against people who are born the same gender, who don't have some of the physical advantages that someone born a male has. So anyway, Riley Gaines gave a speech at San Francisco State about this issue. And I will give credit to San Francisco State for allowing that speech to happen. I think that's a good start, although they're going to let us all down in just a moment. But Riley Gaines, after that speech was given, was stalked in the hallways, assaulted, and then essentially, you won't see in the video, but she was kind of held captive because she couldn't get out of the room that she was in. There was security. So just watch the clip that she posted to her Twitter account. Are you ready? That's absolutely unbelievable. You hear the person at the end shouting, "What are you effing crying?" to this girl who's being mobbed. It's insane. So I want to read for you. And again, I gave San Francisco State credit, but I'm about to take it all back. They sent out a statement after all this went down. And I'm going to read the whole thing because it is unreal. Unreal on so many levels. So it starts, "Dear San Francisco State community, today, San Francisco State finds itself again at the center of a national discussion regarding freedom of speech and expression. Let me begin by saying clearly, the trans community is welcome and belongs at San Francisco State University." No problems up to this point. "Further, our community fiercely believes in unity, connection, care, and compassion, and we value different ideas even when they are not our own." Again, good statement up to this point. "San Francisco State is regularly noted as one of the most diverse campuses in the United States. This is what makes us Gators, and this is what makes us great. Diversity promotes critical discussions, new understandings, and enriches the academic experience." And this is where it all starts to go downhill. "But we may also find ourselves exposed to divergent views, and even views we find personally abhorrent." And might I just add, you're telling me that it's abhorrent for a woman to express an opinion that she doesn't want to compete against a biological male? That's insane. They go on to say, "These encounters have sometimes led to discord, anger, confrontation, and fear. We must meet this moment and unite with a shared value of learning. The statement went on to say, thank you to our students who participated peacefully in Thursday evening's event. It took tremendous bravery to stand in a challenging space. I am proud of the moments where we listened and asked insightful questions. I am also proud of the moments when our students demonstrated the value of free speech and the right to protest peacefully. There it is again, that pesky word, peacefully. These issues do not go away, and these values are very much at our core. This feels difficult because it is difficult. As you reflect, process, and begin to heal, please remember that there are people, resources, and services available and ready to receive our Gator community, including faculty, staff members, coaches, and mentors who are here to support you. And then they go on to offer campus resources to people. The well-being of the San Francisco State campus community remains our top priority, and it is from the Vice President for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management. Now, let me point out a couple issues with this statement. I know they might seem glaringly obvious. When I first read the thank you to students who participated peacefully in Thursday evening's event, I really thought that it would be followed by a condemnation of those who did not participate peacefully. As you'll see, there was no such condemnation. And then, instead of saying anything to Riley Gaines, apologizing perhaps for what she dealt with after she left that event, they offer resources to students on campus who might be scared and trying to heal and process and reflect, woe is them, on the events that happened because they were so hurt by Riley Gaines' words. But absolutely no acknowledgement of the actual physical encounter that Riley Gaines had to endure after speaking on their campus, a campus they say is open to divergent viewpoints. They invited her there, and that's how she was treated. And instead of apologizing, they're making excuses for and really just gaslighting the public into believing that there wasn't an issue and that their students were brave in standing in a space. It took tremendous bravery to stand in a challenging space. Does that bravery extend to Riley Gaines? So Riley put out a tweet about this that is so freaking spot on, and it speaks to an issue I've been discussing a lot, which is political violence, as long as it fits a certain ideology, is just fine. Just fine. You know, January 6th, which I believe is a national embarrassment, that's totally not fine because, you know, of the ideology of the people there. But the whole summer of 2020 in Seattle, just fine. Let's just ignore it. They're there fighting for equality. So Riley Gaines puts out this tweet, and I want people to truly think about this. She said, imagine if the roles were reversed and a group of white conservatives ambushed someone within the LGBTQ community, physically assaulted them, and held them for ransom for 3 hours. There would be arrests and repercussions for the perpetrators and administration who allowed this. Tell me that that is not true. Tell me that that is not true. And I know that's true because I personally went through it myself at CHOP in 2020.
Let me just say something. If I could just, let me talk to you.
You are the only one.
Every time I watch that, I still am brought back to the anxiety of that moment. And do you think that there was any vocal condemnation of what happened to us by Seattle city leaders? No. The only council member who said something later deleted her tweet because people were saying that she shouldn't be sympathetic to us. So when I look at what happened to Riley Gaines and when I think about Riley Gaines' sentiment, can you imagine if us at CHOP, if it had been, and I've said this about CHOP in general, if it had been right-wing Christian nationalists using AK-47s, AR-15s that took over 6 square blocks of Seattle, including a police precinct, do you think it would have been treated with even a fraction of the kid gloves that it was tweeted? Do you think Jay Inslee would have said, I haven't heard about it? I don't know anything about that. Do you think that if it was a reporter for The Stranger who was mobbed and had to seek refuge in a fire station by right-wing nationalists that Seattle politicians wouldn't have said anything about it? Of course they would have. And that's the hypocrisy. Political violence, Barry Weiss said this, and I'm not going to get the quote exactly right, but political violence in carried out in pursuit of a just cause isn't violence at all. And that is truly the cover the media gives, the cover the ruling party gives to excuse this kind of behavior. There's no moral hypocrisy. And it truly is absolutely shameful. It's why I always preach actions before affiliation. You judge someone by their words, by their actions, without any care or consideration for their political party, their ideology. And that way you're always morally consistent. But somewhere along the line, a huge segment of our population has lost the ability to do that. And it is really quite shameful. And I told Nicole before we started, I previewed my CHOP video again. And it just brings me, it gets that. I get it in my gut. And then it's like in my heart every time.
I want to be there to protect.
Oh my God. Going back, if I wasn't working for Fox, I would have punched some people in the freaking face.
Yes.
100%. I don't condone violence. But in my own self-defense, I would have punched some people in the face.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, recovering from that, we'll get to your comments and questions in a minute. But first, have you tried the East Side Weight Loss Clinic plan yet? I have people who are like, oh, I'm thinking about it. We're almost to summer. I lost more than 30 pounds on the East Side Weight Loss Clinic plan. As you can see, if you're watching on the video feed, the picture on the left is stuffed like a sausage into that dress. It's just, I was like bursting at the seams. And then on the right is actually Nicole and I in December at a country music concert in Las Vegas. And look how much happier I look. I was 32 pounds lighter. I've lost almost all of my COVID weight, and it's super exciting. And I told you, I did it most of it in 2 months. So if you're thinking, I got some summer, you know, I want that summer bod, you can do it by then. It's only April. So give Dr. Ryan Coogan at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic a call or just visit him online, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation. Good things about the program, none of those gross prepackaged meals or anything like that. You don't have to go into an office to get weight if you don't want to. You can do the entire thing virtually, which is really nice. You get this handy app on your phone that sends you like words of encouragement every day, which I needed like every day the first 60 days of the program. So anyway, check it out, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Okay, we're gonna take some questions from the live stream before we get to my sanity check of the day. Let's see. This is a, what do you call it? A super chat? What do you call it on YouTube?
I think so. Something like that.
Super chat. I'm like an old lady. Mini and kind on YouTube. Bill Biz said, great to have Wes sponsoring the show. Really tells me he's a good guy who will stick up for friends. By the way, bring back the old sequence for Unbelievable. What?
We're getting a lot of that.
Oh my gosh. People liked the old Unbelievable. You don't like the spaceship? I'll have to change the graphic if we bring it back. Wait, tell me, is it the song you liked or is it the visual that you liked? Because that's like the third or fourth person who said that. I really like the spaceship. I might have to overrule you.
People have a hard time with change. I think it's just change.
Thank you for that. And Wes Jones, we're so excited to have him as a sponsor. And we're going to be adding some other sponsors in the weeks ahead that might sound familiar to you as well. And, you know, I have so much loyalty for these sponsors who had loyalty to Dory that it's just, I'm so excited to have them on the show, but also to be able to advertise and to read their sponsorships because I know that they're good people and I want to also help their business. So I think it's great. On Patreon, Ben said, the firearms ban seems to be evidence that legislators don't care about the laws they pass or don't pass as long as they pass an agenda. And that's how I feel about this too, which is when you are simultaneously proposing laws that would reduce punishments for people who use guns to commit crimes, and then you want to talk about gun violence, I just can't take you seriously. And again, I challenge any Democrat to explain to me how some of those laws line up with the ban on these so-called assault weapons. It also bothers me that you have lawmakers who don't care about the constitutionality of something. If you're serving in that capacity, the Constitution should guide every decision that you make. And it bothers me that they're pushing things through that are blatantly unconstitutional, and they're hoping to get sympathetic judges. That's just not how things should work. On Facebook, Phyllis says, amazing how Inslee made a promise to fix mental health in 2018. Western State Hospital loses its federal accreditation along with federal funding. What has he done since then? The answer is approximately nothing, except beg you for money with broken promises. On YouTube, Bob said, Riley and peacefully, Meaning what? Nobody was shot. Yeah, is that the standard that San Francisco State was using for what's peaceful? Nobody died. Apparently. Although, you know, they called 2020 like peaceful, mostly peaceful, and people did die in CHOP. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, I don't know. Peaceful means that it's people who they agree with. That's what makes it peaceful. That's the only thing that makes it peaceful. On Facebook, William says, Inslee is in violation of his oath of office, Washington State Constitution, U.S. Constitution, in violation of federal immigration law, which is a felony, and Ferguson aids and abets Inslee in these acts, in my opinion. I don't know in the moment if all that is true. I'm assuming with federal immigration law, you're talking about sanctuary policies in that one. YouTube Daniel says, great to have Wes sponsoring. Oh, did I already read that? No, it's a different person. No, you put the same comment twice.
Oh, sorry. That was after he bumped it up.
Check Bill Biz. Was that his comment or was that Daniel's comment?
See, I think they both.
Because those are the same comments. Double check that. Because I want to make sure Bill Biz gets his real comment read. The one that did a
You're
super
right.
chat. Okay, you want to read Bill's real comment? Yep, so, oh my gosh, Bill. Nicole almost shortchanged you.
Yeah, that was
so
my fault.
It was Daniel again complaining about the intro sequence.
That was Daniel again.
And you're
yes.
the only one, Daniel. I love you, man, but I'm gonna overrule you.
I didn't
you on
remember
this one.
It was him the first time.
It was him the first time.
Oh, geez. Okay, well, no. So the Bill Biz, Brandy, I appreciate your common sense approach to issues, a rarity in Seattle. Also miss Dory quite a bit.
I know. We miss Dory too. It's been did I already talk about the letter or the card that I found of Dory's? Did I talk about that on the air?
I don't think so.
Maybe. Dory, we went out for dinner, not the last birthday, the birthday before then.
Right.
We went out to Snoqualmie Casino, and it was us, Dory, my fiance, and we paid for dinner at the steakhouse. And a few days later, I literally get a thank you card in the mail from Dory for buying him birthday dinner. And he said his wife, Suzanne, like had talked about the importance of doing that, but it was a handwritten thank you card. I found it the other day when we were switching studios, and I was like, my buddy was so nice.
I have lots of notes.
Oh, you make me cry today. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, sorry about the mix-up on the
Okay, Bill, we gotcha.
Super
thank
chat.
You for the super chat. Let's see. Facebook Steven said, on the gun ban, who's going to carry out enforcement? I don't know. I mean, I don't know to what extent. My guess is that there wouldn't be proactive enforcement, that there would be like, hey, we got a complaint that this gun shop is selling these, they're not supposed to, or somebody commits a crime with one of them and finds out that they're illegally possessing it. That's kind of my thought of how it would happen. Diane said, if Ferguson becomes the next governor, we're screwed. He's a total fascist. Look, I have met Bob Ferguson many times, and we've had many an interview back when I was with Fox 13. I've been to his home to interview him. I've met his wife, and I think that they're perfectly lovely people. I do not agree with his politics or his approach to certain issues, and I want to make sure to bifurcate those two things. And I know it can be hard at times because you feel like some of what he does is a personal attack. I find often, Shama Sawant's a good example of this, Shama Sawant and I get along swimmingly in person. Like, we'll sit and we'll talk about her dogs. She has this, like, funny fear of cats, like, serious. And we'll talk about that kind of stuff. And then the cameras will come on and she's Shama Sawant. And so I guess I've learned in my job to sort of separate the person from who they are politically most of the time. Just like I would hope that someone could separate my opinions that I give on the show when they see me out to dinner with friends or family. But I also agree that I do not want Bob Ferguson to be governor. I think that that would be an extension of the Inslee administration and nothing more. And that worries me. And I see the state of our beautiful state. And I think we just need a change. We need a change. We can't have a continuation of someone who's been in office for 12 years. And so that's sort of where I'm at on this. And I also don't like the hyper continued obsession with Donald Trump when we have so many issues here to deal with. And I think that that's all his campaign is going to be, is guns, Donald Trump. And I'm going to be thoroughly annoyed by that. Let's see, Aaron on YouTube, just a couple more. Hell yeah, because arming the common citizen with the capacity to fight alongside the military is the entire point of the Second Amendment. And again, Aaron's spot on that. Because when you look at why the Second Amendment was included in the Constitution and the verbiage of all of that, and people want to say, oh, it was never intended to include modern weapons, but the intent of the Second Amendment was to make sure that civilians could fight back against a tyrannical government. So if you take the intent of the Second Amendment and you apply it to today, that would mean that civilians would need to be armed to the extent that they could fight back against a tyrannical government. And we can't even do that right now. If you really think about all of the weapons that the government has, drones and all these things, these highly expensive, highly technological advancements that they've made, the citizenry isn't in a position at all to be able to fight back against a tyrannical government. So even in that sense, we're not really living up to the intent of the Second Amendment. But Aaron makes a really good point, which is if you're looking at it for that reason, then that's the justification for weapons like an AR-15 and an AK-47. Mary said, oh, this one's cute. I saw this earlier. Mary said, listening on vacation in Palm Springs. Okay, rub it in. I'm right to the point of spring here where I'm like, the rain is so depressing.
It really is.
Oh, it's so depressing. Ugh. So, Mary, I'm happy. You know what? I'm happy for you. But I also don't want you to be watching the show on vacation.
Why?
Nicole's like, don't stop saying that.
Don't say that.
Because I want her to be drinking a drink by
the pool. You could do both. That's the beauty of our cell phones is that we can watch something and have a drink by a pool.
That's true. Okay, I'll stop doing that.
Or listen. Just listen.
All right, you Mary. Good for you. Good for you. Okay. All right. We will end. I won't forget this week. End with a quick sanity check. So I have been talking about the fact that I do not think Trump is particularly good for the Republican Party in Washington State. And I know there are a lot of you who disagree with that, but whether you disagree with me or not is not going to stop me from saying something. And I hope that you can appreciate that about me, that I will say things to an audience that I depend on financially, even if I know it's going to bother them. Republicans in Washington State have something called an action conference coming up. It's a conference put on by the Washington State Republican Party. And I actually attended it last year because I was invited speaker. It was me and Ari Hoffman. We did this kind of panel discussion about the media, etc. And I had a really, really good time. Everybody was super nice. And I even answered questions from the audience and got into a couple tit for tats about Donald Trump, which I love. You know, I refuse to speak to a room. So I've been giving a lot of speeches across the state. And I'll give that same freaking speech, whether it's leftists or people who, you know, love Donald Trump. I'm not going to change my opinions so I don't offend somebody in the room. And the same was true at the Action Conference, but everybody was super nice. Well, they've announced one of their speakers is going to be a woman named Liz Harrington. And they put out a flyer. Now, Liz Harrington is a spokesperson for President Donald Trump. I've interviewed her before. She is very good at the Trump talking points. Like, they are just like two peas in a pod. And the Seattle Times, in response to that, Danny Westneed, who's a columnist over at the Seattle Times, put out this op-ed, and I shared it on social media. I agree with Danny wholeheartedly on this issue. His op-ed was titled, "Wah State GOP Just Can't Quit What's Worst for Them," talking about this continued allegiance to Donald Trump or propping him up. And I absolutely agree that it is insane for the state Republican Party to keep doing something that is leading them to lose. And there was some internal polling done by Project 42, which is connected to Future 42, which we talk about on the podcast. And it found that this massive percentage of people in Washington State say they're afraid to vote for Republicans. And a lot of what's driving that is their dislike for Donald Trump. Now, you might think that's completely unhinged and unreasonable, that, you know, they should be able to vote for a Republican governor or senator without being concerned about Donald Trump. But clearly, that's not the case. We live in a blue state. And this is just our reality. We live in a blue state. And Republicans have to be able to appeal to moderates and independents if they have any hope in the world of winning. And what we know from the data and the polling is that moderates and independents don't particularly like Donald Trump. So when it comes to, you know, you might have people who are very, very diehard Trump fans and they don't want to alienate him. But here's the thing. When you invite someone like Liz Harrington to your Republican Action Conference, will the people who are there like it? Sure. But that's fine. You don't need to win their support. Republicans don't need to win the support of people who are going to the Republican Action Conference. You already have it. You have to put yourself in a position well before 2024 where you can win the support of moderates and independents. And you're not going to do it when you invite someone like Liz Harrington to speak at this event. The Seattle Times picks it up. You put it out on social media. And now moderates and independents are like, oh, they are still all in for Donald Trump. And I cannot vote for them. Again, I know some of you think that's unfair, that's unreasonable, but it is the reality. And so that's why I continue to say that Republicans in Washington state have a decision to make, and they should make it very, very quickly. And that is either you care about Donald Trump or you care about winning. Both of those things cannot exist at the same time. And that is just a cold, hard truth. But that is the definition of insane, is to continue to do something that is leading the party to a place where it is this close to never being able to win an election for statewide office ever again. So that is the sanity check that I think every single Republican needs to make. All right, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Thank you for all your wonderful comments and contributions in the comment section. We'll have another episode for you tomorrow. In the meantime, if you want to find out how can you support the show for $5 a month so we can keep doing this full time, if you want to figure out where can I watch segments from the show, where can I listen to the podcast, how can I contact the show, visit undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. You can find it all in one convenient place. And we will see you guys tomorrow at noon.